Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And you're listening to Books and Boba, a podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Martin Yuen.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here to discuss our September 2021 book club pick, Chemistry, by Waiki Wang, and also to celebrate our fifth anniversary for Books and Boba. Rira, we made it to 5 years. Congratulations.
Halfway into a decade, yes. Yes. What a milestone.
Yeah, and to celebrate the fifth anniversary of Books and Boba, we are releasing our first ever run of Books and Boba merchandise, which includes t-shirts, sweatshirts, and tote bags.
Yes, I know that it's very late into the game. I know a lot of podcasts and YouTube creators create their merch like very early on, but you and I just didn't think about it. And now that we're at this milestone, it's like, yeah, we should probably release it.
So yeah, after 5 years, we're finally doing it. So like I mentioned, we're selling t-shirts, sweatshirts, book bags through the Bonfire platform. To find our store, you can go to booksandboba.com and click on the store option on our main navigation menu. You can find it next to the bookshop link, and that'll take you to our Bonfire portal. The way that Bonfire works is we'll be selling our merch through limited runs. So the order period for this first run will take place over the next 3 weeks up until October 21st. So you just need to place your orders before then to be part of this first run. After October 21st, the orders will close and you will be receiving your apparel or book bags through the mail within the next 2 weeks. Rira and I chose the Bonfire platform after countless hours of research as the best choice for us. And we chose it because it gave us the best combination of available products, potential revenue, and ease of use for our listeners. So yeah, we've always heard that our listeners wish they had some merchandise to show off their membership as a listener of this podcast. And now we're excited to be able to provide that.
Yeah, if you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for sticking around. And if you're a new listener, welcome.
Yeah. All right. So with that said, let's get started on our discussion for our September 2021 book club pick, Chemistry, by Waiki Wang. I wonder if it's Wake because of the pinging, but you know, this is how I've heard it pronounced elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I mispronounced Waiki's name in the last like 3-4 episodes when I've announced our book club pick, so really I think you're good.
Sorry. All right, so as always, we'll start off with the book jacket description.
Yeah. At first glance, the quirky, overworked narrator of this novel seems to be on the cusp of a perfect life. She is studying for a prestigious PhD in chemistry that will make her Chinese parents proud, or at least satisfied, and her successful, supportive boyfriend has just proposed to her. But instead of feeling hopeful, she is racked with ambivalence. The long, demanding hours at the lab have created an exquisite pressure cooker, and she doesn't know how to answer the marriage question. When it all becomes too much, her life plan veers off course. She finds herself on a new path of discoveries about everything she thought she knew.
Yeah, so this was my first time reading this book. Rira, this is your second time, right?
Yes, the first time I read it was back in 2017. I was around the same age as the narrator, so I had feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I just finished this book this past weekend, and it was a lot of fun. The writing style is very, it's you know, stream of consciousness, which I'm not always a fan of, but I didn't mind in this one. I think it's because I could relate so much. Even though I'm not an academic, there was a lot about the narrator that I can relate to. And I mean, I was trying to categorize what kind of book this is, and it's like a unique genre, even within Asian American literature, which is like delayed coming of age, right? It's not exactly a YA or middle grade like kind of story about like coming into yourself as like a young person. It's coming to yourself as an adult, which is something I think is much more common for people like the main character in Chemistry, people like children of immigrants, who I think even millennials in a way, right? Because we're all kind of coming of age later in life in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I think it's also especially true of people who are in highly demanding fields where you're kind of expected to have high expectations for yourself. And when you don't meet them, you're extra hard on yourself.
Yeah, I mean, Rira, you're also on record as someone who is not a fan of like this type of prose. How was it reading it for the second time?
I wrote a review back in 2017, early 2018, and this is what I said. I liked how the book was formatted into short bursts of reflection. As someone with anxiety disorder, I definitely related to the narrator's ping-ponging of negative thoughts. There is a sharpness about Weike Wang's prose that delivers both humor and heartbreak in a really understated but intense manner. And I think that is true. The stream of consciousness wasn't really a bother to me. It's really funny because Weike Wang was a chem major at Harvard University. And I think that really shows, because a lot of the prose reminded me of like scientific research papers or academic research papers, where it is very sparse and to the point, but it cuts deep. So I thought it was very in character. And as like someone with anxiety, like I said, like the format of it in like little tiny bits and pieces, it made it easier to digest the stream of consciousness.
Yeah, it was almost episodic. It reminded me of when I was in grad school, I was hooked on reading PhD comics, which I don't know if you're familiar with those. It's a webcomic series by George Cham that kind of like satirizes and makes fun of the life of people in academia, especially like PhD students and postgrads. And, you know, obviously I was not in academia. I was in grad school for business school, but a lot of the same similar things apply, you know, dealing with professors that are arrogant, dealing with dumbass undergrads, you know, and navigating what exactly is you want to do with the path that you're on. And it was a really interesting way to read a story. But it wasn't, if you try to explain this format to like someone like off the street, it may sound to them like it's really disjointed, but it's not. It all fits into like a very cohesive story about this woman who is learning to accept herself for the first time.
Yeah, and like the format of it being scattered, it's very much in theme and in character. So I feel like if you do explain it to someone, they probably won't understand why the format is that way. But once they start reading, it definitely makes sense. It clicks. And
yeah. So the book sermon does a pretty good job kind of setting up the story. And yeah, for those of you listening, we will be spoiling the plot of Chemistry, which I don't think there's like no real big like twist or spoilers. There's no like third act reveal that this is all like, you know, a delusion or whatever.
Like just like looking through reviews, like most of the reviews are positive. Like a lot of people really enjoyed this book, but from the complaints that I've read, are from people who really hated the fact that there was no quote-unquote plot, that it was like so meandering, that it was slice of life, and it was so slow, and they're like, when is stuff gonna happen? And it's like, well, it's that's not gonna happen, because that's the whole point of this book.
I mean, that's wild, because I thought things were happening all the time. I mean, you can say there's no plot, but this book was all plot. This book was all like you know, we are in the head of someone who is at a crossroads in her life and needs to, you know, figure out what really matters. And I mean, that is the plot of basically any coming of age story, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at just like the structure of the book in terms of acts, like you have the inciting incident, like right at the beginning of the front page, it's the boyfriend asks her to marry him. And she's just like, I don't know about this. Ask me tomorrow. And then like a couple of pages later, she has her mental breakdown. She's breaking beakers. And that is like the catalyst for her coming of age story, which is full of just misadventures, I guess, with the dog. And then it goes back into flashbacks of her childhood and her memories of her parents' turbulent marriage. So a lot of things do happen. It's just that it doesn't really seem like it's a lot of things are happening because it is in bite-size fractures and everything is so gradual, you know?
Do you think it's also because this is a character in their late 20s, which is an age where readers might be less sympathetic to someone who doesn't know where their life is going?
I don't know. I feel like most people don't know where their life is going. I feel like the people who do know where their life is going, like they are the anomaly.
Yeah. That doesn't align with something that one of our readers mentioned in Goodreads, which is, let me pull it up real quick. Avon Love on Goodreads wanted to ask, one of the discussions in the back of the book was about how Eric was the only character that was actually named. Eric is the name of her boyfriend at the beginning of the book. Would love to know what everyone's take on that is. And I mean, not to start this discussion of the plot off on the side character, but I mean, Eric being the only named character was, I did notice that as well. Everyone else was named by like their,
I guess like their profession. Yeah. So you have like the lab assistant, the lab partner, the best friend, and
yeah,
the mom, the dad, and like the main character, the narrator, is unnamed. So Eric is the only person who is named.
Yeah.
And I joked with Marvin before we started recording that I thought Eric was named because he's the only person who has his shit together and knows what he wants in life. But in all seriousness, I think it was a purposeful choice by Wyke because Eric is the anchor to the narrator's life. Like, he does the cooking, he does the laundry, and he's the one who's like keeping things together, who desperately wants this relationship to work out while the narrator is kind of spiraling in her depression and anxiety. So it made sense to me that he would be the only person named.
For me, I was thinking along the lines of maybe he's the only person that's named because he's something that, like you said, is the anomaly, right? He isn't the boyfriend. He's just Eric. And Eric is this, I wouldn't say perfect being, but this like this entity that represents what a perfect life is. You know, someone who had loving parents, someone who grew up as like the popular kid, someone who is
smart and passionate about his job and is not burnt out by his job, and also really into music.
Yeah,
there's a lot of very personal cultured traits.
Very like his red hair is desirable. Like, oh, I hope, you know, your kids have his red hair. What a shame that genes don't work that way.
He's also super patient. He never gets quote unquote mad.
And which is interesting because I think Eric is the subject of a lot of discussion in the reviews and in for this book, right? Because he is a character who is essentially, I wouldn't say done dirty by them, by the narrator, but he, you know, he doesn't get what he wants, right? Because the narrator just isn't there yet. And we can discuss more about that later on. But I know a lot of people really empathize with him, which I found was really interesting because when I was reading the book, I was kind of thinking, why isn't he like
doing more,
you know?
I know he's doing a lot. He's like, quote unquote,
the perfect boyfriend. But at the same time, you know, as someone who, and I think this is an interesting difference in who reads this book, right? Because I grew up as a child of immigrants, because I grew up with parents, like with a parent a lot like, you know, maybe not to the extreme of the narrator's parents, but like at least with the same values. I felt like in the conflict between Eric and the narrator, I was taking the narrator's side more, even at the beginning of the book, which I'm starting to realize is not the common approach people took to this relationship.
Yeah, I feel like with a lot of people, when they read the book, they figured that Eric, you know, like poor Eric, like he's being so understanding and sticking around and like, you know, why won't she marry him? Like he is like the perfect package and it just doesn't make sense at all. And I was one of those people when I first read the book. I wasn't like super on Eric's side, but it was more of like, well, he's like a decent guy. Like I don't see him as a villain for asking to go on a break with her because he is so patient and understanding. But the second time around, I was more like, well, he's like a good guy, but at the same time, he's so used to having things handed to him on a silver platter. Like he never had to struggle like the narrator's parents, and he can never truly understand that strife. And you can see how he's very much not willing to sacrifice as much as, say, like the narrator's parents, because they, you know, they sacrificed a lot to come to America and it really affected their relationship. And there's a scene where the narrator mentions like he was studying Chinese. And he was like, he was really into it. But then when it came down to meeting her parents, he couldn't speak in Chinese to them at first. And he would correct the mom's English. And she gets really mad because she's like, why are you correcting my mom in her own house and making her feel like she's inferior to you?
Do you remember the reason he gave too? He said, yeah. It's because like, I can't be charming if I'm speaking in a foreign language because I'll come off as wooden.
No, he doesn't actually say that. That's the conclusion that she jumps into.
Oh,
like what he actually says is like, well, we're in America and, you know, you should speak the language that the country asks you to speak. And then she picks up a stapler and is about to like,
that's fucked up.
Yeah, but he has that. A redemption moment though. Like after that, like after that conflict, the next day he talks to the mom in his broken Chinese and makes her laugh, and there is like a bonding moment. So he does put in the effort after, like the narrator says, "What the fuck, man." Like, that was kind of racist.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why I empathized with the narrator a lot, especially in the beginning, was you can see how he was unwilling to really understand her dynamic with her parents. Like, he would say things like, you know, I don't know why you let them control your life like this. He wasn't a bad guy. Like, everything he says and does comes from what probably a good place. But at the same time, he doesn't take the opportunity, like, especially when you're in an interracial relationship, a lot of the work there is also to be able to bridge those gaps and not like have, you know, you shouldn't expect the other person to conform to you in any relationship, really, but especially in one that involves different cultures, right?
Yeah, yeah. And also just like, this is something that has to do with his position in his field as well. There are chapters where the narrator talks about like really successful scientists in history and how they were mostly just white men. And even though like there's been some improvements in women entering STEM, it's like, well, what are you going to do from there? Like, they're not being taken seriously once they get there. There's like no preparation for them whatsoever. They don't have that confidence, and they don't understand that like it is an all boys club. And it's, you know, most of the time you're going to end up as a technician unless you're like that one lab partner with three balls and, you know, is really good at her job. And for Eric, yeah, he's like a white man in a male dominated field. So it makes sense that, you know, he is able to succeed to a more like to a bigger extent than the narrator.
Yeah. And I mean, the narrator mentions this in the book, is he loves chemistry. Like, chemistry is his life. He knows it's what he wants to do. And that's not something that she shares. And I think this is something that a lot of people who come from upbringings that emphasize academics can relate to, especially, you know, your like a stereotypical Chinese American, Asian American children making upbringings where like you have to be a doctor, lawyer, or engineer. And so you choose those paths, even though it's not necessarily something that you yourself are interested in, right? And you know, people who choose that path for those reasons typically do end up like technicians, right? They don't, it's not something they're passionate about. For some it is, but for a lot of people, it's just something that they do to make money and because it's what the path set for them led them to.
Yeah. And also, like, for a lot of those fields, there are steps, you know, they're very defined, like one milestone after the other. To become a doctor, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, it's hard. You have to put in the work and it takes like 10 years. But once you pass that stage, like, you're set. You don't have to question your career as much as other fields.
Yeah. And the main character is the child of a PhD, right? Her father has a PhD in was it metals, like metallurgy or?
Like metal alloy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Which I think is another type of chemistry. It's like a specialization in chemistry, probably.
Well, he was a PhD student. Like, he got his PhD in the end.
Yeah. And because of that, because he knows what the process is, he lords that over her, right? Like, I did it when I was your age. Why can't you do it? Blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of, I mean, I know in the end we learn to sympathize with the parents as well. But there's a lot of toxic parenting going on, which definitely hit close to home as the child of, you know, immigrants, because I think these were, you know, the types of, I don't know, I don't want to generalize, but I feel like...
Yeah, I can definitely understand what you mean. And it's also like something that other Asians throw their fellow Asians under the bus for, because it's like, my parents were strict, but I turned out okay. But like for a lot of us, it's like we did not turn out okay. A lot of the strict upbringing and emotional and verbal abuse, like that impacted us. Like not all of us were able to rebel and get to a point in our lives where we have, I guess, like this independence from our parents.
Yeah.
And it's really complicated because it's like because of Asian culture and Western culture, there's like collectiveness and filial piety versus, you know, being an individual and being independent. Like, how do you reconcile those two opposite ideas?
And it's such a catch-22, right? Because, like, being academia, I mean, because the way a lot of us gain freedom from our parents is to find a job and move out and be independent. And you can't do that when you're still in school in your late 20s because you're a PhD student.
Yeah. There's a quote that I really liked about this conflict between, you know, having parents who came to the country with almost nothing and were able to succeed against all of the odds against them. And the quote is, "Such progress he's made in one generation that to progress beyond him, I feel as if I must leave America and colonize the moon." So
I don't know if you were, but like as a kid, you know, when I was being dressed down for various reasons, mostly related to not scoring well in school, constantly reminded how hard my parents worked when they got here
it's a given. If you are a child of immigrants, the parents are always like, back in my day when I was your age, like, I was able to do this. Why are you lazy? Why can't you do this?
Oh, man. Such flashbacks when the narrator was describing, like, the forced tutoring sessions.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, war flashbacks right there.
Yeah. And it wasn't until, like, I got to calculus that those sessions stopped. A, because my dad started traveling for work more. And B, because the level of math went beyond what he was comfortable teaching and like drilling.
Yeah. I think there's also like this layer of like, are your parents from like super educated backgrounds, because my family is definitely in that level, because my dad went to like pretty much like an Ivy League school in Korea. He was like at the top of his class, and my mom also went to like an elite school who was also in top of her class in her major. My grandmother was one of the first women to graduate from the first official college in Korea. And I have relatives who, even though they didn't grow up in America, they went to like Duke University and Columbia. So Whoa. There was a lot of pressure for me as the first child to learn English as kind of a first language and to attend American schools to succeed, because it's like you have all of this history of scholars and people who were able to make a difference in Korean history, and having cousins who are like pursuing very competitive fields at like Ivy League schools. So yeah, and also like, you know, I read this book when I was 27, so 1 year older than the narrator. The narrator is 26 years old, and she's struggling to graduate from her PhD program. And I never went to grad school. I don't know if I ever will. It is a debate that I have with myself almost every month, where I'm like, should I apply to grad school? Do I like get an MFA, or do I like try to do something else? I don't know. But at the time when I was an undergrad, I guess I was a quote unquote overachiever. I went to New York University. I went to a very expensive school. And for me, it was like, okay, I'm a scholarship student. I want to, you know, make sure my education is worth its while. And I overworked myself quite a bit. And in my final year of college, I had a mental breakdown. And I kind of went through the same thing that the main character went through. And yeah, like it brought back a lot of traumatic memories. So yeah, like reading this the second time around in my early 30s, it was quite an experience, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, reading this for the first time as someone in my, I guess you can say late 30s now. Shit, I just aged myself. But it brought back memories of those times, right? And I think, you know, the age you are when you read this book really does affect the way you relate to it, right? I mean, like I mentioned at the beginning of the book, I definitely sympathize and empathize a lot more with the narrator than it looks like a lot of readers did at the beginning. Because the first part of the book, really, I think a lot of people were more sympathizing with Eric's plight and like, why can't this narrator get her shit together and like see what a great deal this is, right? Like she has...
Yeah, what a great deal this is. Yeah, like you don't lose a guy like Eric. But that's another thing with the narrator. Like she's seen what happens to women who follow their husband's dreams.
Yeah.
And how they have to like sacrifice all of their ambitions, and how all of that like bubbles up into resentment and ruins families. And yeah, it seems like Eric doesn't understand that, because he came from a very loving family that never had to make those sacrifices.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we get the vignettes into the narrator's sessions with her therapist, which I thought was really, I mean, what did you think of the character? What did you think of the portrayal of like, yeah, I'm seeing a shrink, but don't tell anybody. You can't tell anyone I'm doing this.
Well, I did have to see a therapist during all of my, I guess, like, emotional mental breakdown. I actually got hospitalized and I couldn't graduate on time. On time meaning I was supposed to graduate a semester early, but I was unable to present my thesis, and then I got hospitalized. And then in order to get out, my outpatient program was you need to see a therapist. And then once I got out, I was like, cool, I'm going to move to the other side of the country and leave Manhattan because fuck this. I do not want to deal with all of this. So I came to California and I had to go see a therapist because they like followed up. They're like, hey, are you seeing a therapist? And I'm like, fuck, I don't want to, but I have to. So like when I saw my therapist, it was just like a lot of them asking me about like my childhood, because every single problem that you have in your life, it goes back to your childhood, like back to your environment. And my therapist was not Asian. So there were a lot of like explanations I had to make. It was the same thing with Eric saying, why can't you stand up to your parents? Why can't you do this? Like, do you not see that this is emotional abuse? And now as an adult with more experience, you know, it's the same thing that the narrator goes through in the third act of this book. Like, she realizes that being a parent is really hard. And like, what courage that her parents had, because they came to a country around the same time, you know, like,
yeah,
at the same age she did. So it doesn't make the things that they said to her and did to her okay, but there is this understanding that, you know, they were humans too that made mistakes.
Yeah, like I think a lot of us, once we hit the age that our parents were when they first immigrated, you know, it's also the age where you start to talk to your parents more as adults and kind of learn more about their stories and what they were thinking when they came here. And, you know, it's something that is the source of a lot of like immigrant fiction these days. I think because a lot of us are at this age where you start to realize that our parents had like full-fledged lives and their own dreams when they were our age. And then not all of them came true, whether because they had kids or because they had to move, you know. A major plot point in the story is her mother and how she was, back in China, she was the breadwinner of the family, right? She was a pharmacist and she made way more than her father. She had a much more successful career than her husband. But then her husband had his own dreams and wanted to come to America to become an engineer and wanted her to come with him. But then when she came over, she couldn't use her skills. She couldn't be licensed as a pharmacist because of the language barrier, you know. And that's a story we see a lot, right? Like highly skilled people who aren't able to highly educated and skilled people who aren't able to do what they're meant to do because, you know, because they can't write or speak in English.
Yeah, and there's something like very isolating too about, you know, moving to America and not knowing the language, but also just not having a support system here. Like, you know, when you're going through a hard time, you can go see your friends, like the narrator and her best friend. But like the narrator's mom did not have that, mainly because of the language barrier. You make a lot of friends through, you know, going to work and talking with your coworkers or going to school. And her mom was just isolated. And the only comfort that she had was calling Shanghai. And that is an experience that a lot of immigrant women go through. I think it's really expected of Asian immigrant women to sacrifice their own dreams for their husband's sake, even if they are the breadwinners. And a lot of the fights that the mom and the dad have, like the mom being like, you wouldn't be where you are unless, like, you know, if I hadn't supported you with my money, and him being like, well, I'm the breadwinner now. And I, you know, why can't you speak English fluently? Like, why don't you get a job? Like, why aren't you succeeding? And just like a lot of that was very reminiscent of like my childhood and also a lot of other Asian friends that
those
I have.
Fights are very visceral. I mean, even though,
like,
those
I said,
sections
war
were
flashbacks.
Short, like, you can definitely feel it. It reminded me of did you watch Minari?
No, the thing is, I have a lot of Korean pride, and I love the fact that this was like nominated for Oscars and won awards, but I am never going to watch that film. I will cry. I will have a crisis, and I don't want that.
There is a scene where the parents have like the exact type of screaming, fight that this book portrays. And it's very visceral.
Yeah, I don't need that in my life. I have like I already live through that. I still live through that. I don't need it. I don't need it in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, we talked about like I want to talk about the best friend.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah. Cause like I mean this is just a random thing, but the baby being called the destroyer was just so funny to me.
But also a genius, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I really like the relationship with the best friend. And the best friend offered like a mirror to her own life. And I think part of growing up is realizing that not everything is going to turn out the way that you envisioned it as a child, right? Like her best friend seemingly at the beginning of the book had it together, right? She became a doctor. She had a husband. She was having a baby. And those are like the three things. Like, basically, she did everything she needed to do to make her Asian parents happy, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought it was really interesting how she went into medical school because she was forced to, but actually really loved going to medical school and really fell in love with her job. And, you know, she married an investment banker who is like equally successful. And it does look like a perfect marriage from the outside. But then once they have a kid, it kind of falls apart because they're not talking to each other because they have such busy schedules. And, you know, they're just like, okay, we're going to take shifts. And it's like, well, it sounds okay on paper, but being a parent is more than a job, you know?
Yeah.
you have to communicate. And it just like shows in like the best friend telling the narrator, like, you need to talk to Eric. Like, have you ever told him that you loved him, like, verbally? Like, have you, like, messaged him? So, yeah, it's, like you said, it's like a parallel of what the narrator could.
And at the same time, it's also, like, you know, while the narrator's going through her shit, the best friend also was going through her own version of chemistry.
I liked how chemistry is the title of the book, not only because the main character, you know, is a chemist, but also like chemistry, romantic chemistry. And also I think chemistry actually means like the study of change, which is pretty much what the character goes through, a lot of changes. And there was a passage where she talks about like what the Chinese word for chemistry was, and mm-hmm. like how the homonyms mean different things. And I forgot what the actual phrase that she uses. So it was like the melting of snow, the melting of change.
Yeah, like chemistry is huaxue, but then the thing with Chinese words is, yeah, there's a lot of homonyms, and depending on what tone you're using, the meaning of the word changes. So there's a lot of different ways hua and she can be, you know, remixed.
The use of language was really nice in the book. I mean, it's a little tidbit, but
I mean, we haven't talked about it, but like all the little sprinkling of specifically Chinese Americanness into the story was very, very fun. The fact that, like she mentioned, like you need to learn about 3,000 Chinese words to be able to read a Chinese newspaper, and she only knows 1,000, so she can read bits and pieces of it, is exactly my situation. I only know enough to like kind of be able to read the headlines and intuit what it means, what the story means. The superstition that, you know, children's traits are chosen in the womb, and basically if you're a lazy fetus, I guess, you choose all the bad traits, because my parents are always reminding me about all of their bad traits that I inherited, and like bad eyesight and, you know, high blood pressure and things like that. And the thing that I don't know if your mother or your parents do this too, but my mom definitely has this bad habit of like always having one last thing to add to the end of any argument so that you can never have the last word. And if you react, you're in the wrong.
I don't know. Like, the fights with my mom has always been, like, I guess, like, before I became, like, a quote-unquote adult, it was just me sitting there and just listening to her rants. So there wasn't, like, a one last thing because I sat for the entire thing. But, like, I remember, actually, this is really funny because, like, not that long ago, like, Dan was asking me, like, oh, like, have you ever spoken up to your parents? Like, he's seen me, speak up to, like, my dad and my mom, like, as, like, an adult. But he was like, oh, did you, like, grow up not rebelling against your parents? And I was like, I can think of the exact moment where I spoke up to my mom and it did not go well. And it's like, that's not something that actually, like, it's just not culturally possible without repercussions.
Yeah, it's not even like physically possible, right? Because it's not physically possible to have a conversation with, I mean, in my experience, have a conversation with parents without it devolving to a screaming fight. That doesn't happen until way later, because I think part of it is they have to see you as an adult too. And parents will never do that, especially if, like, you know, you haven't achieved adultness in their eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like, with the whole strictness, it's like they're trying to teach you to be quote unquote fearless. Like, you're prepared for anything. Like, if you're able to achieve my standards, you'll be able to achieve anybody's standards. And it's like, dude,
yeah, and
your,
I think that
standards are impossible.
And that's part of the disconnect, right? Because as quote-unquote culturally Americans, we're taught not to care about other people's standards, right? The only standards you need to follow are your own.
Yeah, but there's the disconnect there. Like, when you have high standards of your own and you don't meet them, you feel like a complete failure. And yeah. I mean, there's a quote in here that I really related to. It's when the narrator is talking to her best friend saying, did I go into science because I liked it or because I was in the beginning very good at it and began to like it? And like, I definitely, it's really funny because the narrator is in a STEM field. Like, we always think about science as, like, a stable field. Like, it is the field that your parents want you to go into.
Yeah.
It is the field that, you know, they brag to other parents about. But it is just as, I guess, like, unpredictable as any other creative field. Because I definitely felt that with, like, art and with writing. Because it's like, well, did I like drawing because I was initially good at it? And that was like the only thing that I found myself like picturing myself doing. But then I ended up hating it a lot. Same thing with writing. Like, I got into writing because I was somewhat good at it. And it's like, honestly, did I have any other options?
I mean, you're still at the whims of the people above you, right? The people who have established themselves in the field, and like the panels of people who judge your work based on things that you publish or based on your track record, your portfolio. And
like with Eric, for example, like, she, the narrator asks him, like, how did you make that jump from being a PhD student to, like, you know, having your PhD? And he's like, I don't know, I just did it. And she finds out later that it's because he actually loves chemistry. And it's not just him being good at it. He actually has a sense of curiosity and discovery, which is like the foundation of being a scientist. Whereas with her, she realizes, like, she doesn't have it. And that's why she hasn't made the jump. But at the same time, when she's tutoring these kids, she realizes that the skills that she did learn in her years of studying science, it comes in handy. Like, nothing really goes to waste. And her students appreciate her. And they, I feel like they learn more through her, like, funny way of teaching than any other tutor being like, okay, sit down. This is how you memorize shit. Like, yeah, this is how you pass your mathematics class. She makes learning accessible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the inner conflict, right? It's like, in order for her to fulfill her parents' dreams, she has to become someone like Eric, right? Someone who succeeds in the field, not doesn't just become a technician.
I guess the thing with Eric and her dad is that they have that fundamental skill or mindset of no matter how many times you fail, you're going to try again. Being a scientist means that you're going to make like mistakes 99% of the time, and you have to be okay with that. You have to be an optimist. And the narrator is not an optimist. She is very impatient and, you know, like with more failures, with her job being like stuck in step 8 out of 25 and doing the same thing over and over again, she just, you know, she just doesn't have that mindset. And really, it's okay. And that's the whole point of the book, being okay with knowing that, you know, like being okay with knowing your limit and not punishing yourself for it.
Yeah, a common step of adulthood, at least for us, is realizing that we should be nicer to ourselves. Just because something doesn't go according to plan doesn't mean everything is ruined.
It's what you do after a failure that shows who you are as a person. Or that is the theme that I got overall from reading this book.
I did appreciate all the humor in the book too. Like this is it's a very witty book. And there's a lot of, would you say dry humor sprinkled throughout? Like a lot of.
Yeah, I think it's like wry humor. Yeah. Self-deprecating humor.
I don't know. There's just so much of this story that I could relate to. Not just like the being a child of immigrants and like having, you know, past overachiever tendencies, but also things like complaining about how winter air sucks. Like she lives in Boston and she spends like at least a ton of the segments complaining about how like the winter air makes her face hurt, which as people who have lived on the East Coast, we can relate to, right?
That's why I moved. I was like, fuck winter. Fuck being cold. Why would I stay here if I don't have to?
I remember the first time I experienced it and I was like, man, okay, I need to put on the scarf or else I will die.
I mean, like spending a good chunk of my childhood in the East Coast, I knew what it was going to be like going back. And I was like, not looking forward to it. That's like one thing I really hate about the East Coast. And yeah, I definitely related to her hatred for winter and yeah, her complaining about it for a while.
And then, you know, all the silly things that her dog does. That was funny. And then I don't know why this segment just made me laugh, but the one where her best friend gives her a damn it doll, kind of like a stress doll, and she names it and she names it Science You Motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whatever works, I guess. Everybody needs an outlet for stress. It was sweet that her best friend thought of her.
Yeah. I guess wrapping up the discussion, I really did appreciate this book. I like the fact that even though Eric is like the focal point of like part one of the book, like her relationship with Eric, that relationship isn't the end goal of the story. Like I really appreciate how in part two is more about her finding herself now that this anchor isn't there anymore. And I enjoyed following her on her journey of self-discovery because, like I mentioned, it mirrors a lot of the things that I myself had to go through to come to terms with my childhood and my relationship with my parents as well. And even though it wasn't like a feel-good, optimistic, you can do it coming-of-age story, like, and in the end, it's not even, you know, she finds new resolve and she finds more peace with herself, but, you know, she's still technically unemployed, right? Like she's still just
I mean, she's getting bank for her tutoring jobs.
Yeah, you know, it's similar to where a lot of my friends end up, which is like we may not be the star engineer, lawyer, chemist that our parents wanted us to be, but we found a place where we feel like we belong and we're doing well enough to live our life the way we want to. And I think that's the start of where the narrator ends up in this book as well.
Yeah. I mean, were you okay with the ending of the book? Because I know some people might be irritated by like her not getting back with Eric. Eric being like, I'll come by just as a friend. And, you know, their relationship not being completely resolved.
I mean, what did you think? Because for me, like I mentioned, like I like the fact that the second part of this book wasn't about Eric and this story wasn't about her realizing, oh, no, what have I done? What have I lost? right? Because I don't think, like, Eric might have been good for her, but he wasn't good for her at the time that he was there, right? Maybe it was a timing issue. And that's, like, real life relationship isn't about, like, that magical moment or the one, right? It's about two people finding themselves at the right time and a lot of luck.
Yeah, I liked her decision because I don't know if she actually says it out loud to Eric, but she comes to the decision of, I want to do more for myself before I get married. Like, I want to succeed more personally before I get married to someone who is also successful, because then otherwise I'm just going to be resentful the entire time. And I thought that was, like, a very mature decision.
Yeah.
So to me, like, the ending seemed really appropriate because she's not there yet. She hasn't reached the level of success and comfort that she wants. So I thought it was a pretty good ending. This is definitely not a book for people who want, like, resolution.
Yeah, it's not a romance. I don't know what people expected, like, her to, like, chase after him in Ohio. Like, the whole point of the first book is reasons why that is a bad idea, right?
I think more people are, like, it's not so much the romantic relationship, but it's also the fact that, you know, she isn't, like, there isn't, like, a final decision on her career or a final resolution with her parents. Because I don't think she even tells her parents that, you know, she quit her PhD program. She's like, I will tell them on my own time. I will tell them once I reach a level of success where I don't fear for my life.
I mean, I guess. I just didn't find that to be an issue with the ending, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problems with the ending. I'm just saying that other people might.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like if that's your take, then what have you been reading for the last few hours, right? because, like, you mentioned that people complain that there's little or no plot. But, like I mentioned at the top of the show, there's tons of development. Like, she's a totally different person from at the end of the book than she was at the beginning of the book, right? She's had time to work through her issues. And experience life without, I think, you know, Eric being the idealized version of a chemist gave her someone to compare herself to 24/7, which also is not super healthy too, right? You know, we're already compared to other people by our parents enough. Having someone there to constantly remind you of ways that you aren't succeeding must have been hard for her as well, right?
Yeah. And also she's a woman in, like, a male-dominated field. So there's also this idea of, like, being competition for other women in that field because there can only be one. So, yeah, like, her comparing herself constantly to other people. Not healthy.
Yeah.
But let us know what you guys thought about chemistry in our Goodreads forums. It was really nice to read other people's thoughts while we were discussing. And
yeah, we always love to hear what you guys think. And with that, I guess, any final thoughts on chemistry?
As someone who read this book twice, I recommend that you read Chemistry twice. And I recommend that you read it when you have a little bit of distance from your life and more of a perspective, because I feel like that definitely enriched my experience of reading chemistry.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I can see how, you know, depending on where you are, your own relationship with the themes of the book, it'll take on different meanings for you. And that's the mark of a good work, which is something that evolves every time you read it. So yeah, thank you to Waiki Wang for writing such a great book. And I guess with that, that'll do it for our discussion of chemistry. As always, you can support our podcast by giving us a rating, a review on iTunes, by purchasing books off our bookshop.org, and by purchasing our new merch. Like we mentioned at the top of our show, we have new tote bags and t-shirts and sweatshirts for sale. So you can show off that you're a part of this book club. Check it all out. You can find links to everything on booksandboba.com. But with that, I guess, yeah, what are we reading for October, for spooky month 2021?
Spooktober. Woo. Okay. So we are reading The Inugami Clan by Seshi Yokomizo. And it is the sixth book in the Detective Kosuke Kindaichi series. But like all like most mystery series, it's a standalone. I think Inugami Clan is probably the most well-known one out of the Kendaichi series. And Seshi Yokomizo is someone who is kind of attributed to be like the Conan Doyle of Japanese mystery. And the book was published back in like 1970 something. So it is quite an old book. It's been adapted into multiple films and TV series. So I hope you guys enjoy it, because I remember reading it back in high school and thought, man, this is my jam. let's see if I still agree as like an adult.
So yeah, we'll be discussing that book at the end of October. So looking forward to checking it out. Thank you for listening to this episode of Books and Boba. Have a great Spooktober.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Quincy Cho.
And I'm Kay Khan Apu. And we host Marvel Makeup. It's a podcast where I teach Quincy a little about Marvel.
And I teach Kay a little bit about makeup. Join us as we watch and talk about every movie and TV show in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I'm mostly watching for the first time.
And join us as we apply makeup stuff to our faces, which I'm using for the first time. Marvel Makeup is part of the Potluck Podcast Collective, and you can find new episodes every other Monday wherever you listen to podcasts.
And you can catch video versions of Marvel and Makeup on our YouTube channel. So please rate, review, and subscribe. And please give us 5 stars so our Asian moms will understand why we buy so much electronic equipment.
Because it's for this podcast, Marvel and Makeup.